are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope you are well. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you should do, must do, can do, will do, and I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't, you got it done anyway, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is, and that's why we appreciate you, and respect you, and love you, because you don't procrastinate. You're a man of your word. You're a woman of your word, and you love Africa and African people. So you get it done. Ashe. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But of course, you cannot listen to this program live. You can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com on the webpage, and then look for podcasts. Click on that, and then there will be African Perspectives. Click on that, and then you will have programs that are dated and titled. I want to thank my good friend, Brother Kwaku, for his assistance. I've been having some technical difficulties. In fact, my laptop is down, and so I can't get anything from that. And the spare one is down as well. So, but we, you know, the thing is, as a firefighter, you know, that was my profession, as I, you know, and I know we have a model of improvise, overcome, and adapt. You know, so if we have to, this is what we'll have to do, you know, because once you're called to mitigate the situation, you ain't, well, I don't know about that, I can't do it. No, you find a way to do it. That's why you're called. You're called to put the fire out, to deal with the EMS runs, to deal with the extrication of somebody who's entangled in a car, whatever. In a trench, in a high rise, whatever. And so whatever you have to do, you do it. And you make it happen. I wonder how that happened. My sidebar. I wonder what happened to that Caucasian captain here in Atlanta who, when they came upon the fire, tried to save this woman. He went in by himself. Some, it was a couple years ago, but his hearing was coming up, and I don't know the follow-up of it, that he was going to be suspended or dock pay because he didn't follow the protocol. And I know the protocol two and two out, but he, you know, even though he got her out, she died. She died of smoke inhalation. But he knew there was somebody in there, and he heroically went in and got her out, you know. In fact, that should have been nothing. That should have been nothing. You know, I mean, if anything, not the public would know, but just within the department. The department noticed, please always observe the two-in, two-out policy, something to that effect, and that should have been the end of it. But by making it public, it made it seem like the fire department, the city, they said, this guy, you know, risked his life, because we as firefighters do. Sometimes we go in. Sometimes we may have to go in by ourselves. Because if we say, I'm not going in, and here you see them, you know, that's one thing that really hurt me about
the policy where the police must be on the scene to secure the scene, to make sure that the scene is safe. Otherwise, you don't go in. And here you could see somebody who's injured, who needs our immediate help, but we're standing back until the scene can be safe. Usually, and this is just being real, the perpetrators of those dastardly deeds are long gone. I never forget, I'm waiting on the corner to see down the street, they're waving at us because they see us. Well, damn it, they don't park so close where they see you. They park way around the corner where they can't see you, can't hear you. You know, don't park in eye shot, in eye view, because they're waving you on until you come on and you just standing on. I can't do nothing until the police get there. And then by the time the police get there, when you do get there, they're dead. Those precious moments, those precious minutes, gone. Sometimes you can use discretion. You know, I remember that's what I did one time, not as an officer, but as a firefighter. And they wrote me up. But I just couldn't stand to see, knowing that, you know, they were right in that hallway. You know, they were begging us to come. And I had a weak-ass officer. He was a chump. I didn't like his ass anyway. But anyway, I digress. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other program we have here on Time for an Awakening Media is this evening. Acres of all times are going to give her Eastern times. Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 this evening with Brother Wahad, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia. Following that is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister PLC, Proof of Consciousness from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., once again, it's Revive. I was going to say, once again, it's me. No, it's not me. It's Revive. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. And then Sunday evening, time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard from 7 until. Every Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. Go to the website and check it out. We Buy Black. Products that are produced by us. Africa for the Africans. Go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Look at the exciting trips that Brother Bamani Tayembe is offering our people this year. 4 trips. 1 trip to Senegal and Gambia. 2 trips to Ghana and 1 trip to Kemet. So, brother, no, excuse me, South Africa. I apologize, not to Kemet, South Africa. That's Renoko offering a trip. He has 2 trips as well. So check out Africa for the Africans, Brother Bamani Tayemba. If you want to see videos of previous trips, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. If you want to see photos of previous trips, go to facebook.com/Bomani. Videos are Bomani2007. youtube.com/Bomani2007. Africa for the Africans. Number to call is 404-931-9429. Give them a call and find out, you know, what you need to do, because on that website, everything is there. Everything that you're going to need to make that trip happen. All the documents, all the things that you need. Once again, Renoko, go to drrenoko.com to look at his 2 trips this year, in the latter part of the year, October to November. First going to Uganda and Rwanda. Beautiful pictures, I tell you. Then going to Kemet. Go going to Egypt. Habesha Incorporated.org. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. They are doing the work, especially with the Kashi Building Program. They are doing the work right there in Ghana. But here at home, they're doing the work, establishing gardens and teaching people how to develop sustainability. Brothers and sisters, check out Habesha. Inc.org, HABESHAINC.org. Shrine of the Black Madonna, located here on the West End and here in Atlanta. I'm Ralph David Abernathy, the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Their store hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7 and Sunday from 1 to 3. They have everything. They got clothing. They got furniture. They got the red, black, and green shoes and the gas shoes. Oh, man. But more importantly, they got books. And if you're looking for a book, they don't have it. Believe me, they'll get it. They also have an African Holocaust Museum. They also have a class, an African history class, Know Thyself, every Saturday, free and open to the public from 1:30 to 3:30, right there on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard in the West End. Excuse me. But if you can't make that, but you want that information, just contact the Shrine of Black Madonnas, the African History Club. They have a video library which now contains 7 terabytes of African Enlightenment. Oh, more stuff that you'll think you'll ever need, believe me. Because I got 4.5. I'm missing the other 2.5 that I'm going to get, believe me. A lot of good stuff. A lot of good videos, movies, documentaries, all kinds of stuff. Excellent, excellent work. The Medu Netcher, the Medu bookstore. Medu means writing. Netcher means God. That's what the Greeks call hieroglyphs. There's the Medu Netcher, the writings of the gods. And the Medu bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. In fact, I'll be doing a presentation next month, the 22nd of April, at the Medu bookstore, an African history presentation. I'm very honored and proud to do so. That'll follow Sister Baina Bello's presentation on the sheroes of the Haitian Revolution that she'll be having a book signing and so forth. So the Medu Bookstore store hours are 404-34. Store hours are Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9, Sunday from 12 to 6. And the number to call is 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263, and that is Mama Nia. I'm a Nia at the Medu Bookstore. The other bookstore I promote all the time is, of course, is Brother Kazimde Ajamu with the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. Number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. He's got books, T-shirts, all kinds of good stuff. And he also has the Nagash shoes, the red, black, and green shoes. And so give him a call. And if he doesn't have what you're looking for, believe me, he'll get it. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, in a Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. And the number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. ULU. The conference was postponed because everything is being shut down across the country because of the COVID-19 virus. It's understandable. Don't want anybody, don't want it to spread, want it to begin to level out and globally and hopefully within the next month or two at the most, it'll be back to health business as usual. I wouldn't like to say business as usual because it ain't good business as usual for us. That's for damn sure. So I'm going to contact Baba Kima because I know some people did come in town. And to find out, you know, what was discussed and what is our next move. Because we have to make a move, brothers and sisters. Us Lifting Us has to make a move. You know, we did not support. And keeping it real. We did not support the cafe the way we should as members. When you have almost 600 members. with about 200 plus in the Atlanta area alone. And even if you didn't go that way to on Sylvan Road over by Georgia Highway 166, right off of 75-85, even if it didn't go that way, excuse me again, you could have gone on the website and purchased some coffee or whatever, or just give through PayPal, just give monthly, working towards your unit, or purchase a unit, whatever it took. I'm heartbroken by it, brothers and sisters, and I always will be, because, you know, here you're an individual owner. His business can maintain, but yet here is a co-op owned by us, supposedly us who are conscious, us who are understanding of what our situation is and being supportive, and it wasn't. I'm going to be saying some more sad stuff today. It's a blue Monday. But it's great to be alive, dear brothers and sisters. It's great to be alive. Akabin Institute, Baba Baruti and Sister Yabaruti have been doing an outstanding job of educating our young brothers and sisters. Of course, they are totally independent, accept no money from outside of our community because they're producing warriors. Their curriculum is about us and instilling that knowledge in our children to make them strong and understand that we must be independent. We must be self-determining. We must be liberated. And of course, we must be sovereign. So make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. That's once again Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. But if you can use Cash App and PayPal, the dollar sign, YAA, letter M, and then Baruti, BARUTI, Cash App and PayPal, donate to Akabin Institute. And of course, my good sister Gabrielle Ruria in Haiti, in the northeastern portion of Haiti, in the hills, in the rural area. Her organization is doing great work with those young brothers and sisters. Please go online to sanjay-haiti.org and look at what she's doing in areas of education, health, and entrepreneurship and sustainability, gardening, growing food, and so forth. Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E-Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org, Sanjay-Haiti. Oh, yeah. Yes, brothers and sisters, it's the Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And the day, of course, is tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day. And, of course, that's one day that Caucasians really let go. In fact, what's ironic is on the 17th, and I'll read it on Wednesday, is Ishakamusa Bereshango and his thing about European holidays. Yeah, thanks, Baba Rudy. Really appreciate and love you, brother. Believe me, I do. Support you. March 15th. There are a few things in the world as dangerous as sleepwalkers. Ralph Ellison, the author of The Invisible Man. Even though our enemies would have us believe otherwise in terms of fundamental cultural characteristics, different African ethnic groups do not vary significantly or meaningfully from the mother culture. And the same applies to European subgroupings, naturally or unnaturally occurring, relatively minor or superficial differences in language, dialect, dress, diet, architecture, do not separate distinct ethnic groups or subcultures from their common core culture. Even the great veneration we see, many Africans in no way compare with the least different between Africans and Europeans. So when we see overriding similarities between the two, favoring the European, we are looking at the wrong Africans, or Africans who are not themselves. Europeans use the psychology of individualism to confuse us as to their global operation as one nation. With it, we confuse the forest for the trees. Knowing this, if we are to regain our power and our way, we must be clear about the fundamental difference between the similarities among people. At the fundamental level, all African people are one people. I repeat, at the fundamental level, all African people are one people, no matter the superficial differences. The same applies to Europeans. And these geocultural differences are of the magnitude and the permanence to make us and them forever irreconcilably incompatible. I say. Affirm, I readily distinguish Africans from Europeans. Affirm, I readily distinguish Africans from Europeans. And I know those Yorugupians. I know those Negropians. Those who suffer from the Yorugu virus. March 16th. A weak person goes where he is smiled at. Hiroto Proverb. The process of creative cultural and social engineering that began molding our traditions began when Africans began. It began with us, and we began with it. And because we share life and truth with it, it is still there waiting on our return. The logic behind African traditions has not changed with the passage of time because it still makes sense for us. And that, and that will not change because we will always be African. Our collective personalities, customs, designs, these traditions to fit us, and they, in turn, reinforce us. In the process, the cultural foundation came into life of its own, a continuous life that has lasted throughout our generations. It lives as an eternal entity, expressing itself through us. It is constant with us until we are no more. The values and the beliefs it ascribes for is adherence determined to form our traditions, take in whatever environment and state we find ourselves in. We are us. And we should note that the values and the beliefs that come out of this cultural foundation do not change either. If anything changes, it is the people who are the culture's heirs. And when the people change, what they believe to be an honor has their traditions change accordingly. But it's not really the traditions that change. People in doubt and fear or in love with others' validation lose sight of what their ancestors gave them. If they who substitute others' traditions for their own in deficit acts of self-hatred, it is only then that enemy smiles so easily disarms us. Wow. Beautiful. Affirm, un-African smiles do not disarm. Do not disarm me. Un-African smiles do not disarm me. The Inye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. Since my computer's down, but we're going to come up with some good stuff for you today. We're going to talk about, you know, I'm involved with the Pan-African Federalist Movement and other movements of African people coming together. We must understand that Africa has a global entity. It's one. There's the continent and the people on the continent. And then there's Africans in the diaspora. Some for a few years, some for hundreds of years. Still African. The Africans on the continent. If it wasn't for conquests of others, Africans on the continent would have began to realize the importance of being one Africa to deal with the world. When Kwame Nkrumah made the pledge, he was sincere. He understood, like many other of the brothers and sisters who, you know, who understood that Africa must be one and will do everything that we can to make Africa one. But of course, because of selfishness and greed and the evilness and the manipulation of the European and others, at this very time, this movement is critical considering what's happening on the continent with other groups, particularly the Chinese, as we'll learn about, and others. May mention that the Chinese want to move 100 million. Well, they have a population of 1 billion, damn near. So moving 100 million people out of China into Africa. And you can best believe it ain't the best and the brightest. Just like when people who came to this country from Europe weren't the best and the brightest. They stayed in Europe. But they came here because they hardly had anything, and they came here to seek fortune and to take whatever they felt it was there for the taking. Don't give a damn about people who lived it before. I'm here to take. The global economic system is designed to keep Africa under unending poverty. Africa, the hungry cow that produces enough milk to feed the world, is not hungry because she has no food within her yard. Neither she's hungry because she is incapable of generating enough food on her table. The simple truth is that this cow is hungry because an iron lock has been placed over her head to cover her mouth, and her children are threatened against their lives to accept what they obviously know to be unacceptable. Sadly, those whose milk Africa every day are not just greedy people. Those who milk Africa every day are not just greedy people who seek selfish benefit from their riches, from her riches. They are also wicked monsters who join efforts to starve her so they can derive happiness and pleasure from the sight of her suffering and pain. Let us start by giving deep consideration to the following. For more than 60 years of independence, no African country is allowed to trade their naturally endowed resources in their own sovereign currency to ensure that true values of these resources are translated into economic development and empowerment on the continent. They can't use their own currency. When Muammar Gaddafi, who was the president of the African Union, wanted to make Africa one Africa and establish the gold coin that he had, that if you wanted to purchase any goods from Africa, that's why I can't stand Barack Obama's ass or Hillary Clinton. And even though he said that was my great, yeah, right. It's just some saving face damn comment, Barack. Because if you would have said, you know what? What I hate to happen is that was a chance for Africa to be free. That was a chance for Africa to control its resources. That was a chance for Africa. And me, as the president of the United Damn Snakes, as an African, So they killed Muammar Gaddafi. They killed him. Any African leader who makes an attempt to break this global economic system that has deliberately designed and instituted to keep Africa under unending poverty is either assassinated or removed from power. Hence, the need for all power holders on the continent to be quiet while observing the future of the next generation destroyed in an arm folding. The real threat did not start with Patrice Lumumba or the Democratic Republic of the Congo or Thomas Sankara or Burkina Faso. Neither did it end with the sad removal of the assassination of Brother Muammar Gaddafi. All of us are victims, and whoever sought to challenge this system need to be aware of the true consequences. Today, the masses of Africans are made to believe that they are suffering because of the corrupt nature of their leaders. However, underdevelopment is designed by something far greater than corruption, corrupt leaders, which is even more abundant in the world system. It's corrupt leaders all over. It's even deeper. Here is the real reason why Africa, with all her huge natural and human resources, remain poor and may have to remain as such for a very long time. When we Africans, we Africans need a car or anything from the colonizers, we work hard to get their monies to pay for our wants. This means that whatever we demand from them, we exchange that with our labor, which is of equal in value to what we are taking from them. This, in turn, creates value in their economies. When we fail to work in their economy to obtain their currencies, we only have the option of going to the global financial market to demand for their currencies to pay for such wants. When this happens, we create demand for their currencies as a commodity. And once demand for these currencies increase, the value of their currencies also increase. Theirs, not ours. If you haven't, Sister Malence on TED Talk, please go. Sierra Leone, Sister Malence. TED Talk a few years ago. She talks about the beauty of Sierra Leone and the multitude of riches and the Caucasian coming there with his damn paper ass money. While we have the riches and they come in with some bull. On the other hand, when the world, need our valuable resources, we are told that we need foreign exchange as a result. We allow them to print their valueless paper in the form of money to exchange our valuable resources. This means they take away all our resources without creating any value in our economies. Imagine if Africa tell the world that when you need our gold, our diamonds, our oil, and so forth, you must pay
this
for
call
them.
Is being recorded.
You must pay for them. You must pay for them in our currency. This will mean that the world will have to come and work on the African continent and create real value, such as infrastructure and technology, in order to get our currencies to demand for our valuable resources that they cannot do without. Other than that, they have to go to the global financial market to demand for our currencies. And this will mean that the value of our currencies will increase rather than the depreciation of exchange rates, as we experience each day in every part of Africa. At this stage, let me point out to you that it costs less than 50 cents to print $100. or a 100 euro note. But it costs more than $100 to mine 2 grams of gold from the ground. So how can we genuinely exchange 2 grams of gold for 50 cents if not for exploitation? If we allow China, America, and the UK, or whoever, to demand for our resources with their own paper currency, we are basically saying that we have no control of those resources, since these people can freely print any amount of these monies to take away those resources of ours. Our economy can generate true value from this huge resource when we are endowed with only with our currencies and are backed up by these resources. And these resources are in exchange in our own sovereign currencies. This is the crossroads that we are at. This is the damn fork in the damn road where we are at. I know the big meeting is next year in Ghana. We're supposed to have a meeting here in October. But if, damn it, if we don't unequivocally state and put into motion a united African states, a united African states, and have and put on notice any leader who does not form and come into concurrence with this united African state, they should be killed. They should be necktied. My good friend Jay. Because that's what time it is. This is the future of Africa and African people. Truth must be told. If the world are allowed to print their monies to buy our resources, then Africa must be able to print our monies and use them to buy whatever we need from them. If not, then they must also come and work to get our money before using that to buy our resources, like we also work for their monies to buy their resources. My name is Kwetu Yeboah, and I love Africa. Contact me at Facebook. Right on, Brother Yeboah. Right on. We'll take this call. Oh, Jesse. 646. Good morning, 646. Good morning, 646. Okay. You know, this is, we are truly at a crossroads as African people. It is either Pan-Africanism or perish. It is either unify or die. That is it. That is it. 646, good morning.
Good morning, Brother Oshie. I was just listening to this show. Sorry I wasn't able to chime in when you called my number. How are you doing, brother? Have you been checked for the coronavirus? The white man is in a serious plight.
Yes, you know, I have, brother.
Are the chickens coming home to roost?
On these devils? Well, let me just say this, man. I know that, you know, there's a lot of information out there about this coronavirus or COVID-19 virus, whatever. And some of it is mysterious. But when you look at a map of what the infection rates are globally, you see that there's very few infections on the continent of Africa, which caused many people to believe that African people cannot get this virus, and that is not true. Especially here in America, you can get this virus. There's no doubt about that. You can get this virus. But one of the things, you know, that, hold on, I'm sorry. One of the things that we must understand is that whether we can get this virus or not, we must protect ourselves. We must, you know, you can't just say, well, you know, I'm going to wash my hands. I'm just going out in public. I'm going to be around this, that, and the other. No, we must do what is necessary to us. We look at this virus across the country, around the world, and how it is affecting us. Even though it is not affecting Africans, as you see by the map. Supposedly, they've only seen it in three places, South Africa.
Hey, Oshie, let me get back to you. I got a call. I'll get back to you.
All right, brother. Peace. Yeah, it's only in Africa, in South Africa, Egypt, and in Morocco. It may be some other places by now. That was last week. And, of course, it changes on a daily basis. On a daily basis, it changes. So I'm not sure. I haven't seen an updated map. But even at that, what I read was that there were people who were infected. And there was two deaths. One death was in Egypt. And it was not a national person. It was a person visiting. And the other death was in Morocco. And the death of a Moroccan was an 80-year-old woman. And, of course, the older you are, the more your immune system has been, you know, depleted over years of time and so forth. And you're most susceptible. They keep saying that people who are older are more susceptible. It's understandable. And I'm, unfortunately, in that susceptible age group. So I got to, you know, be careful and be wary and make sure that I, you know, make sure that I have doing things that I must do to keep my immune system. Because this last week when I was at an ASCAC meeting, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, came back from the meeting and, man, wow, I felt terrible. Felt terrible. And, you know, left the meeting, felt great. Then I started feeling bad, my throat and so forth. And so I was battling that for those 2 weeks. And what was ironic was that Sunday and that Thursday I was going to Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I had to make myself well. And I did the best that I could, even though didn't do well sleeping and still coughing up and so forth. But that's the story on that. That's the story on that. And so what I want to do is, okay. One of my computers is being worked on. And that's the one I usually use for the research when I, here at the one computer that's in front of me and the one to the side of me. And so, you know, they're valuable. They're invaluable. I definitely need them to do this program the way it should be done, with justice for our people. So, you know, so I'm going to take a break in a minute. We come back from the break, a further discussion on the importance of African sovereignty, importance of African independence. We're going to talk about the China's takeover of Africa. You know, and the fact that in conjunction with the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and Europeans, and as well as Chinese and Indians, and every got makes you want to holler. Every damn body else, you know, except us, except Africans, the first people on the planet, the first great civilizations in the world. Not just Kemet, but Nubia, Punt, Kush, all these great civilizations, contemporary civilizations, Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. To a point now where there's a possibility that Africans can be eliminated off this planet. And don't think it couldn't happen. When you have evil and devils like Bill Gates, through his promotion and implementation of vaccines, when I heard him say it himself on a piece, Because, you know, when you talk about vaccines, you know, they're in the history, particularly of a disease, some kind of ailment, and you come up with a vaccine for it, it was to either cure that or eradicate that, such as polio, Jonas Salk, you know. But you're talking about vaccines to control population. Vaccines. Evil people in this world, dear brothers and sisters, very evil. Some evil people in the world. Evil systems. And the European systems. And because of the European Urugu virus, it has affected the damn planet. And everybody thinks that they could just come into Africa and take whatever they want. Man, I'm on the verge of cussing, ain't I? Whoa. I really am. I'm on the verge of just letting loose. You know? Because it's frustrating. It's very frustrating. You know? We as African people, the first people on the planet, people came from far and wide to sit at our feet. We didn't kick them to the curb. We let them come in and we taught them. Everywhere we went, we shared. We didn't come in to take, to undermine, to displace, to kill, eradicate. We came to share. And now we're at a serious crossroads as African people. What are we going to do? Truly, the ball is in our court, as the saying goes. It's unify or die, Pan-Africanism or perish. Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. There is no other alternative. There is no other alternative. And I know the Negropeans, the Negroocracy here, I know. It's like when I read those Inye Sesems and I picture these Negroes, I picture the Bule, I picture these people who believe in this system, who believe this system is just as much for us as it anybody else. I picture them. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
No done favor. I don't know karate.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, followed by Let's Buy a Black 365 from 8 to 9, and then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10, and then on Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And then on Friday, if it's 8 p.m. Friday evening, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. on Friday. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC on Sunday, 11 a.m. And then Sunday evening, once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. on Sunday. Every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Oh, man. Like I said, this is one of them days, dear brothers and sisters. This is one of them days. You know, I feel like, man, I want to just beat somebody's ass.
This African country now knows what it feels like to get owned by the Chinese Communist Party. Hi, welcome to China Uncensored. I'm your host, Chris Chappell. Zambia is a landlocked country in southern Africa, and it's poised to be the next African country to fall prey to the Chinese Communist Party's predatory lending practices. The new service, Face to Face Africa, gets straight to the point, asking, is Zambia Africa's first casualty in China's takeover after defaulting on loan payment? Well, technically it's not the first. Don't forget about Djibouti. But it could very well be the next, and it's all happening under the radar. According to Africa Confidential, Zambia can't afford to pay back its multi-billion dollar loans to China, and so there are secret talks going on between Chinese and Zambian leaders to hand over the country's biggest energy producer. The report says the state electricity company ZESCO is already in talks about a takeover by a Chinese company. ZESCO supplies electricity to about 80% of households in Zambia. So signing away control of a strategic national asset is a big deal. But it doesn't end there. The same report also revealed that Zambia is poised to hand over the Lusaka International Airport to China. That's in addition to all the Zambian copper, nickel, and cobalt mines that are already run by Chinese companies. And Zambia's state-owned TV and radio news channel, ZNBC, is already 60% Chinese-owned, which might explain why you see lots of news reports lately about Zambia-China friendship, but not so many reports about all those Chinese takeovers. Of course, a Zambian government spokesperson has gone into denial mode, saying that all stories relating to the sale or takeover of public assets by China are false. But investigative reporters from Africa Confidential say Zambia is getting owned by the Chinese Communist Party, literally. Africa Confidential also warned that the long-term outcome could be effective Chinese ownership of the commanding heights of the economy and potentially the biggest loss of national sovereignty since they gained independence in 1964. Another term for this whole thing is simply debt trap.
More of Africa finds itself in China's debt.
China is saddling the partner countries with crippling debt.
Saddling Africa with unsustainable debt.
And debt trap has become a buzzword that's harder to shake off than a hater in a Taylor Swift song. Yes, my pop culture references are very current. At the recent China-Africa summit in Beijing, a senior Chinese official denied that his country was engaging in debt trap diplomacy. And even Chinese leader Xi Jinping jumped on the denial bandwagon. He prefaced the announcement of $60 billion of new funding for Africa with the so-called five knots of predatory lending.
China is determined to implement the five knots, to not interfere in countries in Africa exploring a development path which suits their own country's situation, to not interfere in the internal affairs of Africa, to not impose China's will on Africa, to not attach any political strings when offering Africa support, and to not seek political expediency during investment and financing in Africa.
Okay, firstly, the five knots is a really stupid name for a national policy, unless Xi Jinping means it in the elementary school sense. The five knots, because they're all sarcastic. And secondly, go back to that opening shot of the China-Africa summit. Why are most of the Africans sitting in the back? Anyway, while Africa's demand for Chinese cash is high, not everybody's buying into the theory of China's good intentions. A specialist in Chinese studies at Britain's University of Nottingham says interference is an inevitable part and parcel of the cash.
Well, I think whenever you engage financially or economically with another country, you do actually interfere into like the political structure, the economic structure, the power structure. So in that sense, any kind of engagement is kind of disturbing the status quo. But that said, at one point, there will be conflicts in the Chinese-African relationship.
And there's a typical formula for how these conflicts play out. The Chinese Communist Party offers loans to needy governments. Those governments become dependent on Chinese money. Then, when they can't pay back the loans, Chinese companies take over key infrastructure. That's according to an investment advisor and political analyst in Nairobi.
But I think, we cannot be naive at this point in time. We've seen countries take on enormous amounts of debt. We've seen hugely inflated infrastructure projects, many of which are white elephants before the get-go. And you don't have to look very far, whether it's Guada in Pakistan, whether it's Tonga, whether it's Sri Lanka, who gorged on Chinese credit and then had to disgorge their port at Hambantota.
In what was pretty much a textbook definition of a debt trap, when Sri Lanka couldn't afford its loan payments, it had to hand over the port of Hambantota to China on a 99-year lease. And the Chinese regime might want to eventually use that port for military purposes. Not to say that's happening now, but it's probably going to happen. U.S. senators aren't buying the story of China's good intentions either. In a letter to the U.S. Treasury and State Department, a group of senators expressed their concern over bailout requests to the International Monetary Fund by countries who have accepted predatory Chinese infrastructure financing. They believe that China has figured out a clever hustle by saddling countries with debt they can't afford to repay and then getting the IMF to bail these countries out with money that comes, in large measure, from American tax dollars. They say the goal for China's infrastructure construction and financing in other countries is the creation of an economic world order ultimately dominated by China, and that this poses a national security threat to the United States. I should note that this letter is signed by both Republican and Democratic senators, proving that the threat of the Chinese regime's global domination is something we can all be scared of. In the letter, the senators ask how the U.S. can educate African allies about the risk of Chinese predatory lending and how the U.S. can provide an alternative to the Chinese debt trap. And while those are both good questions, for countries like Zambia, which have already signed off on at least $8 billion of project financing from China, it may be too late.
Well, I think in some cases it's too late, and in some cases the dominoes are falling. In Zambia, you got a Eurobond price at 70 cents in the dollar. If you follow the markets, that's telling you that basically Zambia's bust. Its biggest lender is China. So we're going to watch this situation now in real time unfold in front of our eyes. And there are a number of other situations which are very, very similar.
So what do you think about China's lending practices in Africa? Leave your comments below. And before we go, it's time to answer a question from a fan of China Uncensored who contributes to us on the crowdfunding website Patreon. James McKay asks, is it possible that the CCP's Belt and Road Initiative will encourage manufacturing production to move to countries with a lower labor cost? Good question, James. In a way, that's already happening. That is, cheap manufacturing is moving out of China to even lower cost countries like Bangladesh. And even with some high-end products, we might see it start to happen. Like how in the midst of the trade war, President Trump is encouraging Apple to move production to the U.S. But moving production out of China isn't necessarily tied to the Belt and Road Initiative. It's mainly because labor costs in China are going up for other reasons, and multinational companies want to make stuff where it's cheapest. China's Belt and Road Initiative doesn't exactly aim to reduce labor costs. It mainly seeks to get cheap raw materials from poor countries, then assemble those raw materials back in China, and then sell those finished products to other Belt and Road countries. That's the goal of the Belt and Road. Also, to create debt traps that other countries can fall into. Thanks for your question, James. And remember, you too can have your question answered on China Uncensored when you become a Patreon supporter. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell. See you next time. As I mentioned, China Uncensored is supported mainly through direct viewer contributions.
Yeah, enough of that. Enough of that. I don't like that Caucasian anyway. I'm trying to be funny because this ain't funny. What's happening to Africa by the Chinese is not funny. And we must begin to look at this for what it is. And and then begin to come together. I mean, brothers and sisters, once again, this is the deal. Either we unify or die. Pan-Africanism will perish. There is no other alternative. There isn't. There is no other alternative. We may want to hope for one. We may, because we're lazy. We don't want to. We may hope for divine intervention. A number of things. But it's not going to happen. To further discuss, and from African Liberty article on Zambia. China is taking over Zambia's national assets, but the nightmare is just starting for Africa. So it expands on that into from a continental standpoint. We just mentioned earlier about the currency. And I once again direct you to, I used to have that on, and I still have it, I just got to find it, Sister Malence of Sierra Leone, who addresses a TED Talk of these Caucasians in Berlin. You know, and they're just sitting there and she's saying, you come with your paper money, which is worthless for our diamonds and our resources. I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, this situation in the next, within this year and next, is do or die. We are truly at a crossroads. And if we don't make that move, if we don't see the progress towards that end, I don't know. Oh, man. China's taking over Zambia's national assets, but the nightmare is just starting in Africa. There have been credible reports of talks between Zambian government and the Chinese on handling over the country's national electricity company, ZESCO, to the Chinese due to inability of Zambia to meet its loan repayment promises. This is expected as China is already in control of the country's broadcasting company, ZNBC. There's also fears that the main airport, Lukasa, could be the next target. Obviously, Zambia is in trouble. And for other African beneficiaries of Chinese loans, they should be prepared for the same possibility and inevitability that they aren't able to repay China. China is smart and deliberate about its policy in Africa. It understands the development deficit on the continent and is strategically using this to keep Africa's economic future under its arms. Africa has what China needs. Africa has what China needs to further propel its economic, specifically crude oil and copper. The best way to ensure an abundant supply of these in the future would be to make the depository countries owe it, which has excellently done so far. The play is simple. Give staggering loans to inept leaders and keep the details of repayment from the prying eyes of the public. Eventually, its debtors are unable to service their debts. China takes over its collateral, which is mostly in national assets. But this does not comprehend the severity of the situation Africa finds itself. Reports show that substantial number of African countries has taken Chinese loans since 2000, totaling a whopping $124 billion by 2016, 4 years ago. Of course, there have been more than that, but Africa is only a victim of its own ignorance, as the world has severely warned of China's end goal. Just last month, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and the United Snakes advised African leaders of imperial intentions of China, a core of the Belt and Road Initiative developed by President Ping in 2013. However, the lack of thought and foresight by African leaders will now let them vet the deal through before putting ink on the paper. Nearly all major economies in sub-Saharan Africa today are massively indebted to China. What makes this worse is that most of them have poor economic projections for the next few years and will almost certainly have problems servicing their debts. For instance, around 72% of Kenya's $50 billion bilateral debt is owed to China, with the East African country requesting an additional $3.8 billion extension. Nigeria is almost certainly accrued some $5 billion in loans from China, and Angola still owes about $21 billion, with pending proposals for another $4.4 billion. South Africa should be getting $14.5 billion in Chinese investment soon and another $2.5 billion loan for an embattled national power company, Eskom. Weaker economies like the Democratic Republic of Congo, Sudan, and Ethiopia have also incurred large debts from China. The reality in these figures is that the majority of the beneficiary countries will not achieve the intended goals of the loan. This primarily is because of corruption and poor economic structure. However, the beneficiary countries will manage to repay China without ending up like Zambia is yet to be seen, especially now that China is responding hard. Defaulters should not expect any help as they have in the past in the IMFF in 2015 with the Multilateral Debt Relief Initiative that canceled over $100 billion in debt for 30 African countries. The U.S. has admonished the IMF not to bail out any country having debt servicing troubles with the Chinese. It does not seem like any other bloc will be willing to, considering the volume of money involved, or in light of risking the U.S. consequences. The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank are independent. But of course, the United States, the United Snakes, is always and going to be the biggest bully on the block. Even though Israel, European Union, NATO, whatever, it's the United Snakes. They are the military arm of European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege on this planet. Never forget it. Never forget it. It also does not seem like any other bloc would be willing to, considering the volume of money involved, or in light of risking the U.S.'s consequences. Now that Africa is having trouble with China, perhaps African leaders could consider prioritizing better financial structuring and eliminate corruption. The African Union reported in 2014 that the continent lost $184 billion to corruption annually. This was only derived from documented figures 3 years ago, which logically puts the figure much higher. Whereas if African countries can plug all leakages, they could generate enough money to finance a substantial part of many development problems they face. More so, the excessive expectation on government to provide jobs, infrastructure, education, and other needs is driving force for loan procurement. It is evident that the government cannot provide all this that is required to make an economic flourish, to make their economy flourish. In fact, the more it consumes itself in this belief, the greater the problems it creates for the economy. For instance, transportation and power generation that accounts for most of the spending of Chinese loans can be efficiently provided by private sectors and private investors. See, I don't agree with this. I don't agree with privatization for what Africa needs. We need one Africa. We need a pooling of resources. We need a cooperative kind of model. We don't need private investors. We need Africans who are willing. Because it's not about an investment, because that's what China's doing. The bottom line is we need a different model. The same reason telecommunications is solving many problems on the continent without government ownership or the need for loans is the same reason privatization will work for these critical sectors. China has made its intentions to dominate the global economy clear enough for any serious mind to realize. It knows the enormous potentials Africans possess, and it will go to the extra length to utilize them for its selfish mission, just like Europe did with colonialism. If African countries should make themselves the stepping stones for China, and worse off afterward, the consequences would be theirs to bear. And theirs to bear alone. The problem, of course, is that this problem can only be solved by Africans. If anyone wants to support what we as African people are trying to do, so be it. But the fact remains, Africans' problems must be solved by Africans. We must bite the bullet, pull resources, pay into it. Africans in the diaspora, Africans on the continent.
You've been placed on hold. Please wait.
Africans in the continent, everyone We as African people, we must do all that we can. To make united African states a reality in these coming years. We don't have till this decade is out. It ain't 2030 beyond, no. It's now. It was yesterday. And it damn it better be tomorrow. Literally. It's now. We are at a true crossroads. Everybody wants a piece of Africa. As Dr. Clark said, Africa has all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. They have manipulated and undermined Africa and Africans for too long. It's over. The nature of us as African people must be Africa for Africans. Period. The question we need to ask ourselves, is it good for Africa? Everything that we do, is it good for Africa? Is it good for Africans? Analyze it. If it is, cool, we move with it. If it's not, we kick it to the curb and continue to move on. And not that it benefits one group over another, one country over, no. It has to benefit Africans, period. What happens in one region is a benefit to the continent. What happens in another region is a benefit to the continent. We must develop that particular kind of mindset. There's no doubt about it that if Africa becomes that strong that Africans, any and everywhere, will have a sense of pride and dignity and will carry themselves in a way that will not be abused anywhere we are because they know we have a home and we have a home with a force. There are more still to this very day after all the hundreds of years of rape and pillage on the continent, still to the day, more resources than anywhere on the planet. Damn it, let's control them. Let it benefit the continent. Let it benefit the people of Africa. Let us train our people to develop the infrastructure, build roads, highways, airports, power plants, schools, hospitals, towns, villages, subdivisions, let us, cities, let us do it. I had to ask no damn body. Look at the example we did thousands of years ago. We didn't ask nobody when we developed Kemet or Nubia or Timari or Punt. We didn't ask nobody for any damn help. Even the contemporary civilizations, we didn't ask nobody, can you help us? Ladies, Bridge, can you help us? Colonialism was evil. Colonialism did a job on us. Captivity, our enslavement, did a job on us. The African mind. To this very day, how we look at each other, how we look at ourselves. The inherent, not inherent, the impacted beliefs of our inferiority. The belief that we cannot do anything outside of ourselves and we must always need help from others. See, I don't want us to romanticize about what happened. It happened. It was beautiful. It was great. And I don't want us to feel bad about what happened in the past either. It happened. It was ugly. It was detrimental. But all of the lessons from what was good and what was bad must be learned so we can move forward with a direction for African sovereignty, African independence, African self-determination, African liberation, African sovereignty. That means that nobody outside of us can tell us what to do. Nobody dictates to us. Nobody takes our stuff. We asked them to build and they built. We supposed to repay. We didn't. They taking our stuff on our continent. There is no place on the damn planet where Africans can say we did this and now we're taking it. Or influence any country in that way. Brothers and sisters, this is a tough time for us. We are truly at a crossroads. We are truly at a crossroads. The takeover of Africa by the Chinese is real. The British or the European has never left. The Indian is still there. You can join this conversation. I know it's very solemn. It's deep. By dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Because it's not funny. It's not humorous. It's not something we can dance our way out of. Crack jokes the way out of. Beg and plead our way out of. The only way we can get out of this madness is coming together, is unifying. The only way we can get out of this is the educational process that is independent, that we give ourselves. It is the only way. There is no other way. And those who stand in our way, whether it is us or anybody else, has to be dealt with. 646.
Good afternoon. How we gonna deal with emotion?
Necktie, brother. Put that damn necktie on their ass.
The South African burning necktie.
That's right.
One of my favorite things that was introduced to the world. I mean, hey, the bottom line is we better hurry up and do something.
Yeah.
Because everybody else is taking care of business and building their place on the planet. We the only ones who it seems ain't doing our thing.
We have all
of the resources to do it, brother.
Right, we do.
I mean, imagine what would happen if we got rid of this filthy, stinking, no good devil out of Africa, and then we started doing what Mao did to the traitors in his country.
Right.
The ones that were causing the problem. Do you know maybe we as African people could probably build up Africa into what it should be?
Of course.
Just like China is what it should be?
Of course. But see, understand even China. China did, there's so much poverty in China. Granted, there are a lot of rich people in China. It's capitalism for the communists and poverty for those outside of it. There are a lot of areas of China that are in abject poverty. But you wouldn't know that if you go to Shanghai, Peking, Hong Kong, big financial centers, the wealth that has been generated and created. You wouldn't know that. So I ain't talking about a system like that that has a face of one thing and in actuality it's another. I'm talking about an open, honest society on the African continent that makes sure that the needs of the people are served and that the will of the people is done.
The only way it should be, Brother Oshie, the only way it should be.
That's right.
I mean, you know, you are seeing things now, and you will see things over the next couple of months that are going to open up and wake up a lot of our people, because now you're going to find out and you're going to see how low down and dirty this Urugu is. I give it another 3 weeks. You're going to see and observe some things if this coronavirus keep on growing and spreading that's going to absolutely blow your mind. Do you know I live in New York and you live in Atlanta? Do you know they are basically shutting down New York?
Yeah.
You cannot go to the movies. You cannot go to the gym. You cannot go to the bars. Do you know one of the biggest problems with the Negro is he cannot be by himself? And the white man is even worse. Do you know what's going to happen psychologically to a no good, filthy, stinking devil that can't go to the gym to do certain things? Do you? I mean, this is about to get crazy.
Well,
this is about to get crazy. And it was like I was telling my old lady. I said, baby, you just have to be at peace with yourself. I told her, only time I'm leaving my house is for one thing. Two things, to go if I have a doctor's appointment or to go food shopping. And it's so bad, Oshie, you can't even get deliveries. That's how deep it is.
Mm.
That's how deep it is. I ordered some things online that I, you know, like to enjoy. I'm having trouble getting there. They're giving you, I'll give you a perfect example. I ordered some sardines. They ran out of stock on the sardines, so I called them up because they didn't send the order. I said, well, can you replace them with a different brand? They said no. But I tell you this, they said, if you decide to make an extra $15 purchase, we'll give you free delivery and a 10% discount. I'm like, ain't this something? And, you know, it's just... in New York City.
Well, that's New York.
Know,
but it's all over. Yeah.
It's all over. So I can imagine what's happening in these tech-type places, these cities like Denver, even your own Milwaukee. I wonder what's going to really happen.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Don't get up on Netflix.
Yeah, for real. That's what a sister said. Brother Oshie, you know, you ain't no sports on TV, man. What you doing? I said, well, I've been watching Netflix.
or what you really need to be doing that, you know, I've been telling people do is pick up an effing book and read it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I've noticed that the clowns that I haven't seen on Facebook for a while are on there doing their thing with the conspiracy theory. Matter of fact, I need a little bit of laughter and entertainment and education, so I may be putting on a Sarah suit and Chevy a little later, because I can just imagine what he's saying about this. You know what I mean? So you gotta laugh a little. You gotta have some sense of humor. You can't panic. You gotta just be cool.
Well,
you gotta sit back and enjoy yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, I haven't.
You gotta think of the kids.
Yeah. Well, you know, I haven't seen on national news or any of the newscasts, but I did see on BuzzFeed or whatever that is that I have on my phone, where it talked about it's Top Buzz video, where the Caucasian who helped develop the corona strain of virus. Because if the coronavirus, there's all the different strains. And in fact, I listened to Dr. Aleem Abdul Muhammad, and I haven't seen or heard from him in quite a long time, since the Million Man March in 1995. I haven't heard or seen, you know, I used to get the final call a lot for many years and didn't see anything in there from that brother, but they had him talking about the coronavirus and different types of virus and what's happening. And he did mention this Caucasian who worked at Harvard University and helped China develop this virus in Wuhan. Yeah, they arrested him, supposedly, based upon this article. And to me, that should be blasted, because if he really did that, and China really did that, and put this out there. Now we know the United States developed the AIDS virus. We know this. A lot of things that have happened, you know, the United States, because of how it operates, it happened. Forget about it. Don't discuss it. It happened. You know, move on. Let's move on. You know, just like 9/11. Next year would be 20 years since that farce happened. And we know it was an inside job. We know Iraq didn't do it. We know those cats from Saudi Arabia didn't do it. We know this. The signs of it is too evident.
Well, the reality is this, Oshie. To be honest with you, we're at an ever-ending war with China. I mean, the bottom line is, you see what Fredo did in regards to those tariffs would cause problems. So what makes you think that there wasn't going to be a situation to where the Chinese people were going to respond or do something like maybe what this coronavirus is? I mean, the reality is every people have a right to defend themselves against aggression and oppression. And some people do it in some real evil and sinister ways that, you know, unfortunately, we don't want to deal with or accept. But, you know, I'm one of these people is, I understand that sometimes death could be a casualty in war. I just want to be on the side that's inflicting a little bit of the damage and not always receiving it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, you know, I just want to win the war against us. I don't want to, you know, just like Dr. Wade Nobles, to me, when I first heard it, has the most definitive definition of power. There is. I believe that, you know, because power is not information and education. And you hear it all the time. Power is information, you know. Power is none of that, because if the information and education that you receive is flawed and inaccurate, and it is, no real power. Power is not politics or voting. You know, we must empower the people. You know, power is not money.
Empowering the white man to have control over your black ass.
Power is not money, because the money, the paper money, you probably didn't hear what I read about China and the fact that the money that are used to buy African goods is the currency of the European. We don't have our own currency. That's why Muammar Gaddafi had to be killed. He wasn't killed because of his, you know, the cost of his crude oil. He wasn't killed because of all the great things that he was doing within Libya, which were true in terms of its people. You know, the disguise, of course, that he was oppressing his people and this, that, and the other. No, he was killed because he was a leader of the African Union. He wanted to make the African Union solid by creating its own currency, a gold coin. And that if you had to buy things out of Africa from now on, you would have to buy within that gold currency.
Yes.
So that's why he had to go.
You would have to be in a position to sustain yourself and your people on a collective spirit with African nations joining forces in a sense as one to grow and develop the continent.
Exactly.
Oh, they don't want nothing like that,
no,
brother.
No.
They don't want nothing like that.
That's why I can't stand Barack Obama. Even though he apologized later, talking about it was one of the greatest things that I had to do. Well, shut up. You did what you had to do because you wanted to help maintain and sustain. European dominance and control.
That was his job, though.
That's your job. Exactly.
That was his job.
Yes, that was his job.
The job of the president is to continue and to contain and grow the empire.
Right.
So, I mean, once you understand that, then you know that Barack Obama could never do nothing for your black ass.
Right.
The problem is you under the illusion and the fantasy that he could do something for your black ass. And all he did was keep you in your position. Now, he had to let a few elevate, but that's how society is. There's always going to be some blacks that's going to elevate into a position to make it seem like you can be a part of the dominant society. But on the whole, if you notice, the lives of black people are getting worse. We just don't understand it or see it. So you have Negroes like Claiborne, John Lewis, and all of that who are building wealth, and their families are doing better, a.k.a. this no-good bastard perm daddy Al Sharpton, who I remember from back in the day was a fat boy. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, both, I mean, those cats have, you know, right.
And look how he has mortally destroyed the black community and elevated himself to where the bastard could get away with paying the United States government millions of dollars in taxes. He's like Amazon and the rest of them. If you think about it, check out what his tax bill is to the United States federal government, and think about the type of money that he makes and how he's in the position that he's in, and his black ass ain't in jail like Wesley Snipes was. I mean, come on, man, it's a damn joke. It's a really joke with our so-called black leadership is. I mean, think about it. If you're going to call on a black man supposedly in politics, who the hell would it be? Name me somebody who it would be. I remember you had a brother in Milwaukee that was no joke when it came down to politics.
Yeah.
I forgot his name.
Mike McGee.
But over there, they hated his black
guy. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Listen, they redistricted his district so radically.
What was his name?
Michael McGee. Mike McGee.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Mike McGee. And then, of course, his son. And his son got caught up in some stuff, too. But now his son is doing well. He's into the CBD and other stuff. And so he's doing well. He's got a couple of dispensaries in this, not just in Milwaukee, but in other suburban areas where white folks live, you know, because only black folks live in Milwaukee. But, they redistrict his district so radically, man, it was just designed to get rid of him, you know, because.
But he still, from what I understand, he didn't close his mouth. He didn't stop fighting for the people.
Oh, no, never.
He didn't back down. He went out swinging. Like you said, that's all you ask for is to confront the oppressor and his oppression of you as a people. That's all a politician is really supposed to do, because the system isn't really good for them to do but so much for you. But at least you don't want to be in a situation to where your black ass give up the house where you always giving up.
Yeah.
That's why gentrification has happened all over this country, because the so-called black politicians have never stood up to fight it.
Right.
They went along with it because they've gotten crumbs. Come on, man.
You see, that's why really you cannot. This is an evil system. The system in itself is evil. And so even though you're in it, you cannot really do anything substantive to help your people in this evil system. You can throw some crumbs at them, but you cannot eradicate it. You cannot ultimately change it. You really acquiesce to it. I give props to those men and women who have tried their best to do something, you know, within that system. I know there's a legislator in Omaha, Nebraska, Ernie Chambers. I'm not sure if he's still in the Nebraska Senate, or the one I just left in Oklahoma City, Brother Kevin Matthews, who's doing some great things within the Oklahoma legislature. But it's minuscule compared to what really could happen if we had that kind of, you know, solidarity, that kind of commitment. But then again, it's still their system. It's not ours. And so therefore, there's not going to be a fundamental benefit to African people in their system. It's not designed. It's not designed in that way.
Thank you. Thank you for having the respect and the decency to tell that truth.
You know?
Thank you very much. Because most people ain't going to say that. They always talking that BS about get a part of the system.
Yeah.
Be a part of the system. Go out there and vote. Go out there and do this.
See,
go out there and do that. But your block behind ain't never getting together with your own to build anything.
So,
you just looking for some Negro that's going to sell you out to be your overseer. That's all a politician is a damn overseer.
And see, that's why that definition is so definitive on power. So it's not politics and voting. It's not money. It's none of that thing. What power is the ability to define reality. Europeans,
that's right.
Europeans, when they came out of that dark age, that medieval age, they went around the world to define reality. And shape it and fashion reality and in their interest. And what the further definition of what Dr. Wade Noble says is define reality and then have those who you have impacted accept your definition as if it's their own. That's what happened to us. They imposed a reality, their definition, their image, their interest on us, and we have accepted their definition as if it's our own. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in their reality? Who we were long ago were the soulless people, no culture to speak of, justifying our captivity, justifying them doing what they did to us. And then what happened after we got out of that captivity physically? It became mental. Then we need to ask ourselves, who are we in their reality now? We're no fit fathers, no fit mothers, drug addicts, drug dealers, criminals, thugs, the scourge.
Listen, all I must say is this. We as African people have to find out a way to unite with one another.
We got to.
With one another, love one another.
We got to, brother.
Do the necessary things to make ourselves whole again. And put as many burning neckties as we can on the Yoruba. If we could do that, I think we'd be all right. Oshi, you have a beautiful
you
day.
You too,
I
dear brother.
I look forward to hearing from you on Wednesday.
All right, Jay.
Hey, listen, brother, we gonna win. We have
of
no
course.
Other choice but to
well,
win as long as we come to the realization that the Yoruba is our enemy.
That's oh, right.
God, peace and love, my brother.
All right, brother. Peace to you, Jay. You're right. Reality is we have an open and sworn enemy. And unfortunately, many of us don't want to deal with that. We have an open and sworn enemy. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs here on African Perspectives on Time for an Awakening. We end it with the words of Stephen Biko. He said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor, the European, the Caucasian, the white man, the crack, whatever, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Brothers and sisters, Bibi Fahodia. Bibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Peace, family.